Today on Coding 101, we start our newest module, Python, with Dale Chase. And we say goodbye to our first code warrior, Lou MM. We'll miss you.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Coding 101 is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Coding 101 is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses and training videos, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/C101. That's lynda.com/C101. Welcome to Coding 101. It's the TWiT show where we show you how to live in the wonderful world of the computer programmer. I'm Father Robert Ballister.
And I'm Shannon Morrison. Today, for 30 minutes, we are going to get you all coded up on everything you need to know to be a code monkey.
Absolutely. But you know what, Shannon? This is a sad occasion because
it is.
We lose one of our own. Sad, but we've gone for 10 episodes.
I know. Have,
Yeah, totally. It messes up the IFB. But we had Lou for 8 episodes. In fact, we really had him for 10 episodes because he was with us for the 2 beta.
Yes.
And we had to say goodbye. We miss you, Lou, and so this is for you.
It's so beautiful.
You will be fondly remembered, Lou. But we need to move on. You see, we're done with C#, right?
Yes, we are. And well, for now.
We may come back. But, I mean, we've got a lot of languages to go through. So we figured we want to give you a little something. Something that's a bit more of what you were asking for while we were doing C#. There were a lot of people who were saying, wait a minute, this platform is so Windows-centric. What about something that works cross-platform on the OS X, on Windows, on Linux? And so, what language did we choose?
We chose Python because guess what? I was playing with it right before the show, and it's actually kind of easy to
it's
get
really
it started.
Easy. It's crazy easy language to learn.
And surprise.
If you hated any of the formatting that kind of held you back in C#, and if you wanted something that was bare bones, so we had a lot of people who were saying, wait a minute.
This one is totally bare bones.
Yeah, totally bare bones. Something you can do in Notepad, something you can do in your nano editor, and then drop it into the compiler. That's what Python is.
It's so very pretty. So I wanted to go ahead and first Snubs Compile, get you guys started on downloading the program and how to get Python on your computer. It's a really, really simple process. If we check out my computer, I'll show you exactly how it works. You simply go over to a website called python.org.
Oh, surprise, counterintuitive. Wow.
I know, right? So you go to the website and there's this big old thing that says download. Surprise, surprise. Now, you'll notice down here, it says latest, and there's two latest. There's Python 3 and there's Python 2.
Right.
Interesting.
And that's because they forked it. So there's actually two forks of Python right now. There's the 2X and the 3X. We're going to be using 2X, Shannon, right?
That's right. So if you click on Python 2.7.6. This is the newest version of Python 2X. And you go to whichever one you need to use. For myself, I just use the x86 MSI installer. It's super easy. And then I downloaded the program database.
Right. Now, we should probably mention that if you have a Mac, Python is actually installed. When you boot up Mac OS 10.6, Python's already in there. But
You're so lucky.
You are kind of lucky. Go ahead and get the most recent version. It'll help you head off any issues that we may run into while coding.
Now, I did want to mention as well, while we were on this topic, if you also go under the download form on the front page, it says not sure which version to use, you can click here. Now, there's a really nice, very descriptive Wikipedia page all about the differences between Python 3 and Python 2. I really recommend checking this out because it'll give you a lot of updated information on what modules will work with Python 2 and why they forked it in the first place. Definitely a good read for anybody who's new to the language.
Yeah. Now, we should also mention that if you are learning Python 2X with us, it doesn't mean that you're closed off from Python 3. You can actually take the lessons. They're perfectly the same. There are a few syntax changes. Like, for example, print moves from a statement in Python 2X to a function in Python 3. And there are other sort of under the hood. Yeah, we'll show that a little bit later on. Ooh. But the lessons of Python will still be there. The reason why we're staying with 2X is because there are so many ready-made modules that will work in 2X that aren't quite ready for 3.
Yes, it's still widely used in lots of different companies and lots of software, so it's definitely a good one to start on. And it's very, very easy to learn, so I can't wait to get started in it. We will be bringing back viewer submissions and viewer questions in our next module. Since this is the first episode, of course, we don't have any review to go over with Python, so we'll be starting that on the next episode.
But do remember that, because you know, one of the fun parts about the show has been looking at the programs that our viewers make. So make sure to go to our Google Plus page. We'll tell you about it at the end, so that you could submit your programs. You can let Snubs take a look at it, and if she likes it, she'll show it off on the show.
Yay!
Yatta!
You know, I heard there's another place where you can learn lots of Python.
I heard about this. So one of the things that we run into a lot is there are gaps in what we can teach, right?
That's true.
Because we only have 30 minutes a week, maybe 45 if we push it.
If we're lucky.
Yeah, if we start
we
it on time.
Early. I don't
know about that. But there are always those little things that users wish they could learn. And things that we would love to teach you, we don't have the time. What we try to do is we give them the highlights. Right?
We
give you, as Shannon always says, we give you enough to kind of poke around and break things. Because we like when you break things.
Go break it.
But people want more. Which
That's
is
true.
Why we are so happy to have Lynda.com as a supporter of Coding 101.
I love them.
Yeah. Now, what is Lynda.com, you may ask? Lynda.com is the online repository for knowledge. They are an online learning company that can help anyone learn creative software and business skills to achieve both personal and professional goals. With a Lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to a vast library of current and engaging video tutorials across a wide variety of subjects, everything from creative and software skills to business negotiation and programming. At Lynda.com, you'll learn how to code, create, and build applications from the foundations of object-oriented programming in C and C++ to desktop and mobile apps for today's popular operating systems. You'll explore the fundamentals of programming, build web applications with .NET, PHP, and MySQL, manage data with SQL databases, and connect to cloud services, and oh, so much more. Now, the reason why we like Lynda is because they have Python modules. Yatta! Yeah, yippee. You can learn about Python at Lynda. All those things that we can't show you because we're time limited, the minutia of the language, which actually is fascinating, you can get from Lynda.com. If you're new to Python or programming, Lynda offers a guided tour through the syntax, flow, and best practices of solid Python code, including how to use Python's native object module to write concise, powerful code. Ready for a deep dive into the inner workings of Python, or to learn Python as an additional language in your developer tool belt? Well, you can take an expansive look at Python's flexible, object-oriented languages, syntax, and usage, and step forward into advanced Python features at Lynda.com. One of my favorite modules at Lynda.com right now is Python for the Raspberry Pi. So, remember, we had ISS above on the show. If you wanted to learn how to do that, how to develop an app for that wonderful little platform, well, you gotta start with Lynda. Lynda.com offers 2,000 courses with more added weekly. All Lynda.com courses are produced at the highest quality, not like a lot of those homemade videos on YouTube, which we love. I mean, both of us have made those, but there's something about professional videos with good lighting, with good cameras, and with good audio that just make you want to finish the lesson. At Lynda.com, the instructors are accomplished professionals at the top of their fields and passionate about their teaching. These aren't people who know but can't teach or who can teach but don't know. They've actually done this in the field. So they teach you from experience. That's one of the things I love about Lynda.com. They have courses for all experience levels, from beginner, intermediate, and advanced, and they let you watch from your computer, your tablet, or your mobile device. Whether you have 15 minutes or 15 hours, each course is structured so that you can learn from start to finish, and you can search the transcripts to find quick answers or read along with the video. Lynda.com also offers certificates of completion when you finish a course, so you can put them on your LinkedIn profile, which is great if you're a professional in the field and you want people to know, hey, I know Python. So here's what we want you to do. If you watch Coding 101, If you're serious about becoming a code monkey or a code warrior, then try lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire lynda.com course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's projects in real time, using the exact same project assets that they do. And you can try lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/coding101 to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/C101. And we thank Lynda for their support of Coding 101.
I'm ready!
Shall we
I'm
do
totally
it?
I'm totally ready. Let's do this.
Let's do this. Okay,
I'm so
excited. If we're going to do it, we're going to have to do a little bit of Ivory Tower. Now, this is going to be a little Ivory Tower that's it's a bit more expansive than we're used to. Normally, Ivory Tower is one or two concepts.
Yes.
We're going to do a few concepts here.
Okay, yeah, let's do
but
it.
But hopefully, I'm not going to blow people's minds.
All right. If you do, I'll just let you know.
Just back me up. Just back me up.
Back it up a bit.
Slap
Andre.
Me in the forehead. It will be all
Can
good.
Can I slap you in the forehead?
If you do, you'll get feedback.
That's okay.
All right, so let's talk really quickly about a compiled language versus an interpreted language.
Yes, because C# is compiled and Python is interpreted, correct?
Precisely, exactly. Or they also call it scripted. Same idea. So when we have a compiled language like C#, you take all that code that you wrote, and the IDE, the compiler, actually turns it into machine-readable code, and then it makes an executable file, a binary.
Right.
If you've ever seen like an .exe file on a Windows box, that's a compiled piece of code. That's an executable. That's a binary. Well, you can't read that code, right?
Right.
Because it's already been compiled for that language. Now, compiled languages tend to be faster because if you compile it down into the machine level, it's ready to execute, it's ready to run. An interpreted language, on the other hand, does not compile down into machine language until you need it. We also call it just-in-time programming. So, in other words, when I complete my Python program, I'm not going to get a little executable. I'm not going to get a binary. I'm not going to get a file that you can't read. It's going to look exactly like the code I just wrote, but maybe in a different, a saved file extension.
Okay.
It will actually turn it into machine code on the fly.
So is that going to end up using more of your RAM?
Yeah. It actually uses up more of your computer resources. This was one of the big things when interpreted code first came around. Remember with Java and all those scripting languages?
Yeah.
You took a big hit because if you're essentially compiling it as you're running it, you're using up some of that power that you could otherwise use for the program just to compile the code,
okay.
Right? But as computers got more powerful and as we got more RAM and more CPU cycles to spare, most of the performance disparity has gone away. I mean, unless it's a really high-performance application, you're not going to notice it. Furthermore, scripted languages, interpreted languages, are incredibly popular on the internet. And why might they be popular? Because another huge advantage of a interpreted language over a compiled language is the cross-platform ability.
Ah.
In a compiled language, even if I have a piece of code that can be used on many different computers, I still have to compile it for that computer. So I have to compile it for Mac. I have to compile it for Windows.
Right.
Maybe I have to compile it for different versions of Mac OS X and Windows. Maybe I have to also compile a version for Linux et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas with interpreted, since I am compiling it in real time, it compiles automatically for whatever platform I'm using.
So it would be good for using it on websites and things like that?
It's great for websites.
Okay.
Right. And that's why you see a lot of requests for scripting language developers.
Right.
It's one of the things that drives the internet today that makes content so rich, and that's why we're learning about an interpreted language.
Yeah, so we are starting with Python 2X, not 3X.
Yes. Now, Python 2x and 3x, what happened with the fork is that the developers of Python came back and for the longest time they've been saying a few things like, oh man, if we had it to do over again, we wish we could have done this or we wish we would have done that. One of the biggest things was the print statement. So in Python, actually, if you could go ahead and drop into my computer, I'm going to show them something right now. In Python 2.7.6, so this is Python 2x, if you go ahead and zoom in, if I wanted to print, all I'd have to do, and this is kind of cool, print hello world. Oh, that's not how you spell hello. Right?
Now, can you show us how you got into this program right here?
Oh, sure. So when we install Python that you actually showed us,
yes,
it's going to give you a little icon, and this is the Python 2.76 shell. It's right at the bottom here, which installed. And I just look, if I shut this down again, I'll just go ahead and jump right back into that, and I get Python 2.76. So anyways, in this version, if I do print, I can just put in quotations, "Hello world," and I get the output. So it's one of the simplest languages to do because it's almost like BASIC. However, in Python 3.x...
I found it.
Yatta! It's Python 3.x. See, it looks exactly the same. I got a shell. But if I do this now, print "Hello world," it's going to give me a syntax error. And the reason why is because they changed it from being a statement to being a function. So just like in C#, if I want to invoke a function, I do print, and then in quotations, "Hello world." And now it prints.
Well, the Python 3 looks a little bit harder than Python 2.
Yes and no. I mean, there actually are a lot of benefits to running print as a function, because then you can do all the things that you can do with a function, right? You can pass the parameters. You can do things that you couldn't do with it as a statement. But this is one of the kickers. Because Python has been around for so long, and because they've already gone through several revisions, and because there's already such a huge installed base of modules that you can pull over, there's a lot of people who aren't going to 3 because this breaks all those modules.
Yes.
If all of my compiled modules, all my collected modules, had been using print as a statement, and suddenly that no longer works, people get upset.
And when you get into thousands and thousands of lines of code, then it's going to be really irritating.
Right, right. Now, something else we should probably talk about when we're talking about Python is the way you end your code lines. In C#, it was pretty simple. You remember? When we wanted to end a line, we put the semicolon.
Boop. Yeah.
Yeah, that told the IDE, this is the end of the line of code. Go ahead and start compiling the next line of code.
Right.
In Python, we don't have that. If you go ahead and look at this, remember, actually, we just saw an example of that. Jump back into my computer. There are no semicolons. If I want to print something, I just go print "hiya."
And then you just hit enter.
Right. And that's because Python doesn't look at some sort of character to end a line. It looks at white space. So if you hit enter, it knows there's a new line.
I see.
Yeah. If you leave a gap,
it's
very smart, right? If you leave it an indent, it knows that block of code belongs to the thing above it, right? So it's just like when you're doing word processing. It's one of the things that sets Python apart from some of the more advanced languages, which is it's very easy for you to figure out what line of code belongs to what.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, it's easy.
It's easy, again. Now, here's something that's not so easy. Do you remember how we declared variables when we were doing C#?
Yeah, I kind of did.
Remember, you had to do type, right?
Yes.
So it looks something like this. When I had a variable, if you go ahead and go to the chalkboard, let's say I wanted to create an integer, I would put int x there. And I've just declared a variable, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's because in C# and in a lot of other languages, especially compiled languages, I have to tell the computer, I have to tell the compiler what type of variable, because the type of variable will determine how much memory it sets aside to use for that variable. And we talked about
bits.
This before. Bits, right. So like an integer would use up 2 bytes, so 16 bits of memory. A long integer would use 4 bytes. A character would use 8 bits. Oh, sorry, And a floating point would use 4 bytes, or 32 bits.
Right.
Now,
okay.
The way that we have in Python, it's actually different. It's not type defined. It's what's called dynamically defined.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. So
that mean?
what it means is all I have to do is name the variable, and because it's being compiled in real time, it's being interpreted, right? It will determine what kind of variable it is by the type of data I put into it. Yeah, you puzzled. Good.
I'm confused.
Switch over to my computer and let me show you really quickly. Now, this is how you define a variable in Python. If you go ahead and zoom in, let's say I want to create a variable called variable 1. So var 1, it has no type, right? But I do this. I put var 1 equals 100.
Okay, so you gave it some numbers.
Right.
So it automatically knows that it's going to be an integer.
Now it knows it's an integer because it's 100. Now, let's say I say var 2 equals...
Another name.
"Hello world." Why do I keep putting a W?
So you know that that's going to be a string.
And no, it's
going
to be a string. And let's put this var 3 equals 3.14.
And And that is a floating.
Right, so exactly. So we've got three types of variables here. I didn't have to tell it what type it was. It just knew.
That's
if it's
cool.
100, it's a whole number. It's an integer. If it's a string of characters, it knows it's a string. If it's 3.14, it knows it's a floating point. And the cool thing about this, now I can do this. I could say print, I'm going to put var2.
You should just put var, the title of it.
Yeah.
And it just works.
Hello world. It prints
That's
out hello
awesome.
World. Or I could add up var1 and var3, and it should get, so I put var4 equals var1 plus var3, and then I'm going to print var4.
What?
103.14.
Really?
Yeah, it's that simple. This is what makes Python so user-friendly.
So, it's so easy.
It is so easy, right? You understand it immediately what you're doing. And the cool thing is I don't have to worry about, oh, well, is it an integer? Is it a float? No.
Yeah.
Python will figure it out for you.
That's so cool. Well, now since I feel like I kind of understand the basis of C#, I could totally just jump into Python.
Exactly.
Like, doo, 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 doo.
Now, we should mention that Python has several different types of data types that it can automatically choose.
Ooh.
There are numbers. There are strings. There are lists, which are arrays,
lists.
Which we didn't cover in C#, but we're going to get into them.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there are also tuples, which
tuples?
Are, yeah, the read-only lists. Again, we'll cover it. We'll get there. Don't worry about it. Then there's a dictionary type, which is sort of like a hash table.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Now, all of these data types we will cover in future episodes of Coding 101. You don't really need to know what they are, though, because, again, Python will automatically do it. As you're entering in the data, Python figures out what it is, and it assigns the right type.
Okay, that's awesome.
One last thing, or actually two last things.
Two?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
We need to output to the screen, and we need to come back. Now, we already showed you print, and we showed you it in both Python 2x and Python 3x,
yes.
Right? Print. Just print. It's like
it's
basic,
easy.
Right? Print.
Right.
So print either in quotations, the string, or print space the name of the variable that you want to print.
And then it ends up just printing directly into the idle, as they call it.
Yeah, yeah, and there you go. That's your screen. But there's the other part, and that is how do you get data from the user, right?
Yeah, because, how do you do that?
Well, in C#, we had console
yes.
read line, console write right. line, exactly.
Yeah.
In this case, what we're going to do is we're going to use a function called raw-input.
Oh,
and
okay.
the reason why we know it's a function is because it actually has parentheses on it. So raw underscore input looks like that.
Oh.
Now, this in and of itself won't do anything. This is just a function. There's nothing in it, right? But what I'm going to do is I'm going to put this. I'm going to put var 6 equals raw underscore input. And then in quotations, I'm going to put give me data. There
feed
we go,
me,
right?
Seymour.
And now it says give me data, and I put 555. What it's done is it's just taken that 555 and it's put it into the variable called 6, var 6.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those things. Looking at that one line of code, most people can figure out what just happened. Variable 6 is equal to a function called raw input. That says, give me data inside. When I execute it,
outputs give me data.
Give me data, which was inside the function.
And it allows you to put some kind of raw input.
Which then puts it in the var. And if I now put print var 6, if I spell it right, 555.
That's awesome.
Yeah?
That's really
I didn't blow anyone,
I'm
right?
Totally
this,
getting
Tay
this.
Chat room, no. You got this, right? This is pretty simple stuff.
This is very simple. Yeah.
And this is what's so cool about it. You can pick this up. And in a couple of minutes, you'll just be making your own little programs.
That's so cool. I can totally do, like, math equations. I could do my own. I could make people enter my own input. Ooh.
Yes, I know. Now Shannon, it's been a while since we did one of these coding modules, but do you remember what comes after the ivory tower?
Oh, I think there's a code warrior
involved. Might be a code warrior. And you know what? Since Lou has obviously died because we had him with Sarah McLaughlin's arms. He didn't die, but he went away for a while. We've got a brand spanking new code warrior. We want to welcome to the show Mr. Dale Chase from Discovery Digital Networks. Dale, thank you for being our code worker. Thank you for coming on.
What's up? Thanks for having me.
Now, you, sir, are a bit of a Python expert. We know that you wouldn't be on the show if you weren't. But would you like to tell the audience a little bit about yourself? Why are you on Coding 101? Why are you our code warrior?
I have been a coding enthusiast pretty much my entire life, since the Apple IIc, when I was breaking into games written in BASIC and then learning how to write BASIC on Apple IIc.
Yeah, so your bona fides go way, way back. And beyond all of that, I mean, you do this professionally, right? I mean, this is what you do. You write code for a living.
Yeah. Right now I am doing actually a lot of back-end scripting for Discovery Digital Networks, working in mostly PHP and a little bit of Python.
Let me ask you this. And, you know, you asked me this before the show, Shannon. Why do you think Python has taken off? I mean, it seems so simple. What we just did, anyone could do within 5 minutes of picking up and this compiler, installing it on their computer. But it is used extensively throughout the web, throughout the internet. What makes Python so usable?
It's so just pick up and go, you guys were saying. It's amazing. It's like my favorite. You can use like any text editor, you know, and a couple of lines, and you just jump right in. There's no real setup to worry about, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's do that. Let's jump right in. And remember, Dale, you're assembling all of this code. You could be assembling it in Notepad, right? I mean, if you're in Windows, you could just type a couple of lines of code and then go ahead and have the Python idle, the idle compiler, open it up and run it just like that.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm going to work in TextWrangler, which is a free
editor.
Thank
you for the explosion, Brian.
Just because, like, you know, using something like that, you can, you know, see the commands show up in a different color and the strings will show up in a different color. So it makes it easier to figure out what you're working with. But yeah, you can just like use a text editor, like just a plain old text file if you wanted to.
You are working on OS X, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
So the difference that you'll see on my machine is that I'll be working right in the OS X terminal. And putting Python in front of my script name and running it that way in the terminal, as opposed to the console that'll be popping up for you guys.
But again, you could be doing this in any text editor, or you could be doing it straight in the Python shell if you wanted to.
That's correct.
Okay. So show us. You've got two programs that you wrote that I asked you to do something simple enough for people to understand, to grok, and then to break. What's the first one you want to show us?
I want to show you this simple addition program. And I'll just go through line by line.
Yeah, guide us through line by line.
Okay, well, actually what you see at the top here is probably superfluous, but this is basically to let the interpreter know that this is, in fact, a Python script that I'm running and which version of Python to look for based on a path variable that's set up in your environment. Not really much to worry about here. I mean, it's pretty much kind of superfluous here. The next line is the print statement you guys were just talking about, which basically just is sort of a welcome for this particular program that just says, hey, let's find the sum of two numbers. And then, as you were just showing, I'm using raw input to have the user give us the first value and then assign that to a value, to the variable first value.
Now, I want to stop you really quickly because there is something very cool in that line, in that you are declaring a variable, you are inputting from the user, and you are outputting to the screen all at the same time, all in one line. That's an incredibly powerful tool.
Yes. And the second line is the same thing, just using the next variable. And the fourth line is, you know, is summing up the two values that the user has entered, along with printing out to the screen the sum at the same time. Mm-hmm. I've encapsulated the variables with a function called int, which basically verifies that the value will be an integer if it is a number.
Okay.
It's kind of superfluous if you've already written. Just it's kind of force
of habit. Kind of reminds me of sanitizing.
There we go. That's yes. Yeah. She was like, oh, I've seen this before. Yeah. Because if some wise arse puts X, you know, of course the program's, if you sanitize, the program is going to kick it back and say, no, that's not a number. Give me a number.
Yeah. You might even just get an error. Just force of habit for me,
right.
I guess.
Right.
To really sanitize it, there's probably another couple of lines you would have thrown in there, but just force of habit for me. I just kind of do that. But you probably don't even need that for this instance.
Yeah.
But.
Technically, you could do that print line just by saying print and then first value, second value.
Yes.
First
yes.
value plus second value.
Yeah.
But this is the more correct way to do it because you're, as we said before, you always want to sanitize your inputs.
Yes. And what I want to point out, though, so I've got your total is and no space and then a comma.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Where does the comma fit in? Like, how do you know that there's going to be a space between is and the number?
So we'll get to this, I guess, in a minute. But so the comma will concatenate the rest of the statement to this first string, but put in a space between. So I could just use a plus, which would add them together as far as the statement is concerned, but there would be no space between the value and this first string.
Oh, cool. Right.
So the comma is what will put a space in between there.
Okay, got it. Interesting Python information.
And to close out, we've got this press enter to exit, which will, for the folks on the Windows machines, will keep the console open after the user has seen the total.
Right. This was something that I noticed earlier when I was messing with Dale's code. I noticed on my Windows machine, the raw input press enter to exit was not included at the end of the code, so it automatically just closed out as soon as it gave me the output.
And that's because in a Windows machine, the console window defaults to close when terminated. You could change that, or you could just enter in that line of code that keeps the program alive until you hit enter. Now, Brian, if you go to my computer really quickly, just to show you that feature again, this is a little something that we just did here. This is showing concatenation. We've got var1 equals hello, var2 equals world, and then you just put print var1 comma var2, and what you get is hello
space.
World. Right. So it concatenates the two variables and adds a space between them. It's
cool.
Actually very useful. But back to your program. Dale, go ahead and show us what happens when you run this.
All right. So let's find the sum of two numbers. Type a number and press enter. Let's do 44, hitting enter. Type another number and press enter. Let's do 67. And your total is 111.
And it does all the math on the back end for you because it automatically knows, or it checks to make sure that it's already an integer.
That those are integers and you're good to go. All right, Dale, so that's numbers, but you've got some stringy strings for us, yes?
Ooh.
Yes, I do.
Yay!
So let me pull that up. Let's see.
I think I have it on my computer as well.
Okay. There we go.
So in this case, actually something else we should probably mention really quickly. This is one of those things that I always forget to mention. When you see a pound symbol in Python, it's a comment. So go back to that screen, Brian.
You can
see it, like after the lines of code, you see that pound. Get in the habit of doing that. Because what you want to do is you always want to comment as much as you possibly can so that anyone picking up your program later on will be able to understand what that line of code is supposed to do.
Correctly, C# was two slashes.
Right. So in this one, it's just a pound. And anytime you start something with a pound, Python just knows everything after it, ignore.
Okay.
It's not for me.
Now, the one caveat to Python is that it doesn't have a mechanism for commenting out a huge block of code,
right,
like you may find by doing like a slash asterisk and then a asterisk slash in some other languages. Like I think C# did that. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. You'd have to do a pound on every line.
Exactly.
pound.
So the really good text editors, the code editors, will allow you to kind of highlight a group, and it will automatically put like the pound on every line if you do a certain key command.
Right. All right, show us some strings.
All right. So this program works similarly, where it asks you, tell me where you live. This was apparently written by the NSA. So we'll do raw input, which state do you live in? And this will assign that value that the user enters to a variable we're calling state.
Okay.
And then we'll
same
do...
thing with city.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. The same thing with city. And so here...
That's weird. So you have a comma space... Oh, I see what you're doing. So when you print that line, it's going to say you live in space the city. So I'll say Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
Comma space and then the state. And the state would be whatever you inputted.
That's correct.
Okay.
Good call.
Let's see.
So shall we go ahead and run this?
Yeah, run that.
All right.
Tell
what state
me where
do
you
we
live,
in?
NSA?
California. And I live in Oakland.
Cool.
I live in Oakland,
so we
California.
Have, I live in Oakland space, or Oakland, comma, space, California. Cool.
That's correct.
Now, Dale, of course, these programs are incredibly simple, and the reason why they're incredibly simple is because I asked you for incredibly simple. But this is what it will do for our people who are taking home your Code Warrior exercise, your homework, and that is it'll let them play with different types of data, right? You've got strings and you've got numbers. I think for homework, Shannon, what we should be asking people to do is write a piece of code of Python, and remember, these pieces of code are going to be up in the GitHub, that combines the two. Yeah, write a program that's going to combine both integers and strings. Maybe you can even throw in a couple of different data types. This is one of those things where you can search on the web and find really quickly all the different types of mathematical instructions that you can use and all the different types of variables that you can use. So
I have a few ideas myself.
Yeah, I think you can get to it. Now, Dale, do you want to tease next week? I think we're going to get a bit more advanced. Where did you want to take the kiddies?
Is it too soon to do lists?
I don't think so.
Oh, we can totally do lists.
Let's
do it.
We had a conversation last night, and Dale's like, so is episode one like too early to do YouTube integration? I'm like, just back it off a tiny bit.
A little early.
But you know, just to keep the kids inspired, Dale, can you tell them what you have been doing with Python and what it's let Discovery Networks do in their back end?
Well, what I had done with Python up until recently, I had a situation where I had a Google Doc that I needed to keep up to date. And as Discovery started adding more and more shows that I needed to have this data put in this Google Doc, I decided that it was getting too cumbersome and I needed a way to kind of automate it. So I wrote a Python script that would incorporate using what was then the Revision 3 API to get information about shows, and then using Google's spreadsheet API to fill in this data for me.
Wow.
And I had it running on a loop at like half hour intervals, and I was no longer concerned about it.
Are you having
that
folks?
That sounds really complicated.
Complicated, but really not that much, really.
Yeah.
Because once you learn the basics of Python, all it is figuring out how to code that logical exchange. If you've ever used a website like Google Docs or YouTube and you figured, oh, I would much rather have this with this and this document with this, we're now giving
That's
you
so
the
fun.
Tools to do it. This is the back end. This is what people write their back end. This is how they access APIs. It's with Python, and you're going to learn it now.
Yay! I can't wait. And thank you so much, Dale, for joining us. It's awesome
no
to have
doubt.
You here.
Oh, no. I'm so glad that you guys asked me to get down with this. Thank you for having me join you.
Get down.
No, we're not going to do that to you. Dale, thank you so very much, and we will see you next week, Code Warrior.
Catch you guys.
Sign out. Bye.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of episode one of our second module. If you liked it, you're going to want to subscribe. Make sure to drop by our show page at twit.tv/code and subscribe. You'll be able to download our episodes, all of our episodes, including the previous module on C#. And more importantly, you'll get our show notes.
Yes.
You need our show notes because they tell you where to find the code for every episode. We've got a GitHub set up, which lets you download all of our examples and run it on your own computers.
And we even have a brand new folder on the GitHub for Python. Yay, so
Make
exciting.
It nice and easy.
Also, we are on iTunes still. For some reason, people keep on subscribing on iTunes. It's crazy. I guess people like the show or something. It's so
code
weird.
Bunkers.
So if you guys want to watch the show on iTunes, we are on there. Please subscribe, and if you want to, review the show and tell us what you think. I do read the reviews.
Yeah. And also, you can find us on YouTube. If you're one of these people who just eats everything on YouTube, go ahead and drop by youtube.com/twitcoding101.
Nom nom.
And you can watch our episodes and catch updates about upcoming Google Hangout events.
Yeah, we totally need to do
one of those. We could really have to do that. We've been so lazy about that.
Yeah.
And I totally want to do it. Let's do it.
Bad.
All right.
We're also on Google Plus. This is the one that we mentioned earlier where you can share your own code, which we do share code on the actual shows. So we'll be happy to shout out to you guys if you want to share. That Google Plus community is over at g+.to/twitcoding101. coding 101.
Yeah.
Please join us.
Yeah. But if you're not feeling
700 people up there.
I know, right?
We're like nine away.
It gets bigger every please. You know, actually we want to hit 1,000 before the end of this module. Tell your friends and tell them, look, even if they don't want to learn coding, we need experts in there. We've got people like Code for Sale Joe who helps people who have coding problems. It's a community. It's not just a forum. It's not just a posting. It's where you can find out how to do the things you want to do. It's cool like that.
And hey, if they're not on Google Plus, where else can they find us?
Well, they can find us on Twitter too, I think.
Oh,
I mean, I think I'm twitter.com/ I'm at PadreSJ, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And I think I'm at Snubs, like that. Boop.
Yeah. And you know what? As long as you're watching us, why not watch us live? If you watch us live, you get to see all the things that may not make it into the final episode. You can find us every Thursday.
Taking shots of garlic sauce.
Ooh. Totally didn't happen. But you can find us here Thursday every week at 1:30 p.m. And as long as you're here, don't we have a chat room?
We do. It's chat.
IRC.
IRC.twit.tv. I was like, chat?
It is chat. Yeah.
Yes. IRC.twit.tv. That's where you can chat with us during the show. We do read it, so a lot of your comments do make it into the show.
Yeah. And that's it for this episode. I'm Father Robert Ballas here.
I'm Shannon Morse.
End of line.
No semicolon.
Mm-mm, white space.
So precious.
Come back to us, Lou.
He's still in on death. Thank you, everybody, for watching the show. We really had fun. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye.